It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello there and welcome to a look back at that first fantastic test match, England against India at Edgbaston. Edgbaston rules okay if you're an England fan, because before the test, England had a 54% win ratio in Birmingham, the best result they've had in any of the English grounds. It's their favourite home. It always has a buzz about it. And I'm sure actually today, Simon, that buzz must have really lifted England when they needed those extra wickets to seal that exciting victory by 31 runs. The crowd were almost like a 12th man.
Yeah, really getting behind England. I noticed that yesterday, actually, when I was commentating, when England came out defending 194 to win, that the crowd really got behind them. As the wickets were falling, I was commentating on three or four of the wickets that fell. When you listen back, just hear the crowd noise behind you. They're really urging England on, and the same today. And, of course, they got the benefit of that early wicket. That was what gave England some momentum. I think there must have been a few doubts when Kohli and Pandya were together, and they got it towards, you know, just 50 required, and then Stokes coming in and taking that wicket. Once Kohli was out, you just sensed that was it.
Yeah. Kartik, actually, as you say, was a key wicket because for two reasons. I mean, one, it gave Jimmy Anderson reward for his endless perseverance, which hasn't been due rewarded in the match, only a couple of wickets in each innings. It's incredible how well you can bowl and only get four wickets in the match. But also, it would have just calmed down David Milan at second the slip, who took that catch, because he's had a pretty difficult time in the slip court. And I counted up the other day that England have now dropped 77 catches in 26 tests. And when you have a bowler like Anderson, who is so masterful at just plugging away outside off stump and just moving the ball a little bit, just enough to take the edge, if you don't have a reliable slip cordon, it makes him far less effective. And that would have been one of the reasons, I suppose, why he did only take four wickets in the test match. Actually, if you look back at, say, Kohli's history of dismissals in England, the last time he came here, seven of those were edges which were caught behind the wicket. And there actually were some really smart catches in that sequence, which haven't really been replicated this time. And it ultimately, of course, Anderson couldn't get his man in either innings, ironically, but Kohli was still the key wicket. And in a way, it was Ben Stokes who reinforced his incredible value to England by always contributing some kind of vital wicket or turning point.
You're so right about that. And he's obviously got the court case hanging over him, and his place in the Lord's Test match, you know, is under question. We don't know what's going to happen in the coming week. But he is a cricketer. It's very hard to keep down. You know, his parting shot, if he isn't going to play at Lord's, was the final wicket. He finished it off. But actually, the wicket of Kohli was the one that opened it up for England. And he was the man today, 4 for 40. He's not had a great year on and off the pitch, obviously, and you know he's not been in great form with the bat, but because he's got that other string to his bow, he's got actually two other strings to his bow as well, because he's a brilliant fielder, but because he's got that other string to his bow, he was actually England's leading wicket taker in the match, 6 for 113. I thought he bowled brilliantly in the first innings as well. He tired towards the end of that India first innings when Kohli was playing really well, but he was the one that dragged England along today. And you know, they missed him so badly in the Ashes series in the winter.
That's a miss for them. Yeah, well, that's right. And when you look at captains, obviously in the modern game, which is such a sort of intense spectacle, you want a captain who's quite calm and reassuring and measured. And the captain needs that sort of inner fire from somebody else, in a way. You can't have a captain shouting and screaming and being the kind of driving force of a team, in a way, because that becomes a destabilizing or a rather random effect on the team. If the captain's up, then the team are up, and if the captain's down, the team are down. You don't want that. You want a captain being fairly equable, but what you do want is someone with the fire in their belly, a sort of warrior-type figure who can lead the troops into battle, if you like. And obviously England in the past have had people like Botham, and there were sort of just shades of Botham's bowling at Edgbaston in the way that Stokes took his wickets here. And also Flintoff, to a lesser extent, people like Peterson in sort of more recent times. They are the warriors that the captain depends on, and the one that was missing in the Ashes, of course, was Ben Stokes.
Fabulous all-round effort by England's bowlers. Man of the match was Curran, 5 for 92 and 87 runs, 20 years of age, second test match. I mean, he just looks such a promising cricketer. He doesn't look as sort of, he's not a physically imposing cricketer. I mean, that's the remarkable thing about him. He looks, you know, about 15 years old. He's 5 foot 9. And yet he's come up with two excellent test matches. He looks as if he's got a magnificent career ahead of him. And you wonder whether, you know, in 5 years' time, we'll be talking a lot more about his batting than his bowling. We've mentioned that before during his test match on this podcast, whether his batting will overtake his bowling. You can make quite big strides forward over sort of 3-4 years, in both disciplines. I mean, is that how you feel, that his batting will become his stronger suit?
I think it's a good question, and not necessarily. I thought here that his bowling seemed to add something. It had a bit more confidence, it had a bit more pace. Clearly the swing helped him. Actually, I have to give a bit of credit to Gary Barwell, the Edgbaston groundsman, and his team, because they managed to get the water onto the ground and obviously onto the square to enable the pitch to be one that actually did suit England, for two reasons. One, there was just enough grass on it to make it seem a little bit off the surface. And two, of course, the lush outfield kept the shine on the ball, so the players were able to swing it really into the sort of 60th and 70th over, and that's where India always do struggle. I mean, but Curran, you know, to hit his six to go to his first ever Test 50 over extra cover off the one of the quicker bowlers for India was a remarkable performance. And I think also the fact that he contributed on all except the first day, really, by either wickets or, you know, useful runs. In fact, I think he did get a few useful runs in the first innings too. So virtually every day, apart from the last day, he did actually contribute something with either bat or ball. And he has a good balance of skill and character. I still think that, you know, for his bowling to be successful, he needs it to swing. But when it does swing, he looks really quite dangerous. Mm.
How do you think this sets up the series now? Vulnerabilities in both sides. I think we know that. There are one or two players under pressure. England have got this issue with their batting lineup. Jennings has just come back into the side, still feeling his way. Milan's averages seems to be dropping, and he's dropped a few catches as well, though he caught a vital one today, and he must be feeling so much better about life after this day's play, taking that vital catch early on. You know, there are some issues there. India, though, clearly got one or two problems as well, or perhaps more than one or two problems. Their batting looks vulnerable against England's bowling in these type of conditions. Now, the question is, are we going to see these type of conditions in the rest of the series? I mean, that you mentioned the Warwickshire groundsman. I suppose that's the challenge to the other groundsman as well, is to produce the conditions that England want. I mean, that's been happening quite a lot in recent years. But can you fight nature? Can Lords fight nature? Because, you know, another belting weekend in London is just a question of, you know, can they actually get as much water on to replicate the conditions here at Edgbaston? Or are we going to see a dry Lords pitch and the ball spinning, and, you know, that really brings another Indian spinner into the equation?
Well, I think you've kind of answered your question, which is to say that England do need surfaces and situations and conditions like they've had at Edgbaston to prosper in this series. I don't think they're going to get that at Lords, because the Lords drainage is so effective now that it doesn't matter how much water you put on it, it all runs away again. So I think it's likely to be, and though I haven't been to Lords this week, but it's likely to be a surface which will tend to deteriorate and be a bit more abrasive. than the one at Edgbaston. So that won't necessarily suit England as well as it did at Edgbaston, although, you know, they have got players who can bowl reverse swing and so on as well. So it's not going to rule them out completely, but it certainly will bring spin, I think, into the equation a bit more. What I think England can do is they can certainly take heart from the fact that the Indian batsmen do look vulnerable to the ball moving still and are hugely dependent on Kohli, who's applied himself immensely, and still they haven't managed to win the match. So they need sort of serious contributions from one or two other people in the top six, which they haven't really had so far. And from England's point of view, I think they must look at the seven left-handers and say that not only is that vulnerable to Ashwin bowling his off-spinners, especially with the newish ball, but also Ishant Sharma going round the wicket, and the other bowlers, Shami as well, going round the wicket. I think that the trend now for faster bowlers to be happy going round the wicket to left-handers has really made a left-hander's life much harder. So England must look at breaking up that whole sort of glut of left-handers and think about one right-hander, whether that means Ollie Pope or somebody comes in for Ben Stokes because of the court case, or whether he comes in for Malan, I don't know. But I would be looking to play another right-hander in that middle order.
Yeah, well, it is a problem, of course, with Ashwin. Seven wickets in the match, lots of England left-handers. He was speaking afterwards and he said, actually, the ball isn't not spinning very much for me here. I mean, goodness me, if it does spin, then you might well have a field day. Anyway, he spoke afterwards. He spoke at the press conference after the game, and he, you know, reflected on India's defeat and yeah, actually talked about, you know, how they felt coming into the final day.
When Virat and Dinesh walked out, I genuinely believe we had the aces in our hands, and that wicket, the first blow, was quite crucial. Like Virat keeps mentioning, when you make runs or when you pick up wickets, you want to make sure that it is a sort of a killer blow, and you want to end up on the winning side, and that gives you more pleasure out of the game. When it doesn't happen, you do feel a little deflated about it. But as I told you before, this game was like a seesaw battle. There was enough in there for the quicks, and it was doing quite a bit. So the bowlers are always in the game, and you do expect batters to get a ball that has their name on it. So with that sort of a game hedging on the balance, I thought we did compete really well through the game. Like I told you, there are a lot of things to be upbeat about, so not completely feeling deflated.
Well, that's Ravi Chandranashwin speaking at the press conference after the first test at Edgbaston. So not too deflated. I mean, you know, four test matches to go, and, you know, if this dry weather continues, and you feel the spinners are really going to get in the game somewhere. You expect them to get in the game somewhere, and of course the magnificent Kohli as well. You know, there are still reasons to hope for India, especially as, you know, it is not a perfect England test match team, but such an important victory for them, I think. You know, when you consider that they were in winning positions, really strong winning positions, twice in the game, 216 for three on the first day, should have got 350, 400. I think that would have been absolutely decisive. And then 100 for five, should have been 100 for seven with those drop catches if they'd been taken. They were straightforward catches as well, and that would have been game over as well. I mean, if they'd lost from that position, I mean, that would have been really tough to take. And, that, you know, they're a team that, you know, they have lost a few home test matches in the last two or three seasons, and that would have been the ninth in the last four seasons, which is a lot for home sides these days. So important for them, and also I think a really significant morning for Joe Root, because things that he tried came off, not least bringing on Rashid for Ishant Sharma. And Rashid quietly actually had quite an effective game. He didn't do a great deal. He only bowled 12 overs. He took three wickets. Well, if he replicated that throughout his test match career, that would be pretty good. And he did get rid of Kohli in the first innings. He did induce a mistake from Kohli in the first innings, which, you know, when you think about it, in the final analysis, absolutely vital. If Kohli had continued on that last wicket partnership and India had got ahead 20 or 30 ahead, as was possible, then it, you know, would have been a very different game. So, you know, Rashid quietly did well, and he came on, wicket in his first over today, England with the review. So, you know, the pick of Rashid does give you something a bit different, and some useful runs as well, a couple of useful partnerships lower down.
Yeah, I totally agree with you about Rashid, and I'm converted to him after serious doubts. He's slotted in really well, actually. Obviously, he hasn't really bowled under massive pressure, but certainly the overs he's bowled so far and the effect he's had have been positive. I just think England have got to get their catching sorted, and why they don't have their two best catchers, who are Root and Stokes, in the slip cordon, I don't understand. Root, I suppose, partly because he's captain and he wants to sort of relax at mid-off and take a more detached view. But England, one of their strengths is bowlers who induce the edge. Those edges have got to be caught, and they've got to have the best. They've got to have the best slip catchers in the slip cordon.
Yeah, well, Root afterwards said Milan is a fantastic slip fielder. You know, he was emphatic about that point. So
he would say if he stays
in the team. Well, I suppose he would, but I mean, that was his point. He said, you know, he's a magnificent slip catcher. So they obviously rate him. Even Ian Botham, who was one of the best slip catchers I've ever seen, you know, he used to drop some from time to time. I suppose that's what Root was saying. You know, it's inevitable in the slip corner you're going to drop them. I suppose what's so glaring here was the fact they put down Coley on 21, or Milan put down Coley on 21, and it was as straightforward a slip catch as you could imagine. And Coley made England pay, not ultimately, but I mean, he did quite significantly with 120 runs. Of course, it wasn't good enough to win the game, but I mean, it felt like such a crucial moment. And you know, just wonder what Milan had been feeling about over the last couple of days. And it's great for him today, actually, that he was able to cling on to that one in the first over.
Yeah, very much so. But you see, England had a slip cordon of Cook, Milan and Jennings for the first over of the first innings. And then Jennings was replaced by Butler at third slip in the second over when England had a short leg and Jennings went to short leg. So, you know, it's just they just need consistency and they need to stick with the same formula of players. But anyway, as a whole, what a fantastic test match. A shame it didn't kind of go on a bit longer, I suppose, but at least there was some fourth day's play. And it's interesting, isn't it? I went to the Vitality Blast match the night before and saw Surrey Middlesex, in which Surrey chasing 222 for victory were 170 for none after 12 overs, and it was raining sixes, and all the crowd were going ballistic, partly because there was £1,000 on offer for every catch in the crowd. But I'm sorry, it didn't have the same intensity, the same excitement, the same beguiling focus or just general tantalising interest as this test match, even though there were times in this test match where there were no runs scored. It just drew you in the way that, you know, the emotion of the players and the fine nuances of the state of the game was so fascinating. Whereas, you know, seeing batsmen just smack the ball into the stands, you might as well watch people on a golf driving range than watch a cricket match, really.
Yeah, well, a brilliant game of Test cricket. I think we should make the point, though, and, you know, having said that, and we're both Test match converts, and, you know, we love Test match cricket. This has been the first game for a while that's really sort of gripped us. You know, there have been lots of one-sided matches, and lots of matches recently where a team takes control early on and doesn't surrender control. The other team, you know, is not strong enough to come back and challenge them. This is the first time the game has, you know, for a while, really fluctuated. So when it's like this, then yeah, it's absolutely gripping. And you know, other test matches have their fascination as well, but this was almost the perfect test match. We should emphasize the pitch had such an important part to play in that, the conditions, and that's what you need, that balance between bat and ball. And in fact, actually, if the ball is just dominating the bat, that makes it, I think, even better. Perhaps too many test matches occur where the bat is dominating the ball. So, you know, well done again to the groundsman for providing that for us, because it's been a really great test match. I mean, if we're being churlish, the only thing you could say is we didn't get down to sort of single figures, you know, 6 runs to win or 8 runs to win or something like that, as happened at Edgbaston in 2005. But, you know, we can't complain. Even if India had won and gone on to win by 2 wickets, you say, you know, excellent, excellent game of cricket that held us throughout, really from the first few overs of the match right to the last ball.
Completely agree. And the pitch, and also the Duke ball as well, which just does enough for bowlers to keep them interested all the time, which does really help and make it a more compelling contest and a proper balance between bat and ball. Well, there's not much time to catch our breath, just 3 days, and then it's all go again on Thursday. This is definitely going to be the series of the survival of the fittest, I think, and it's going to be tough for the quick bowlers to, you know, to keep going, and especially if in the way that England bowl in that attritional sort of way, you know, these guys are going to get through a lot of overs in a short space of time. I just hope they can put their feet up and get their bodies on ice for a few days. I suppose they've got an extra day off. So England have gone one up with four to play and will feel at least confident that they can overcome this powerful Indian team, which of course are number one in the world in their ICC rankings. But we all go again next Thursday at Lord's. So we'll speak to you then. Thanks for listening.
Podcast Network.